Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
On the phone with me, I have Dr. Madeline Sherrick. She is an author and longtime educator in public schools and university system. And today we'll be talking about children's mental health issues. So thank you for joining me today, Doctor. I really appreciate the time.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, first of all, before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I've had a very interesting life. I actually was born in Belgium. My parents were Holocaust survivors, and we came here on the Queen Mary when I was 3 years old. And my father, unfortunately, was only the sole survivor. He had nine brothers and sisters, and he was the only one that survived. And when we came over here, I think the values that impressed upon my parents and us was that we came here and we saw America as a land of opportunity. We would work hard. We would try to make the world a better place and contribute to society. And my father, throughout his life, was always someone who was a charitable person. He never made a lot of money, but he always contributed to worthwhile causes and was a volunteer until he died when he was 90.
And you've been a longtime educator in the public schools and university system. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, one of the things that we always valued was education, because we always saw that as a way of upward mobility. But besides that, I always felt that education was a place that you could make a significant difference, because you're imparting not only academic knowledge, but you're also imparting values, and you're helping grow a community for the present and for the future. So my educational experience, I used to teach math. And now I am a field supervisor out of Pepperdine University, and I supervise student teachers. And I've always seen the world through the lens of a child, and I always ask myself, how do kids interpret what they see, what they hear, the books that they read, the people they come into contact with? And I always wanted to make sure that whatever I did contributed in some way, in a positive way, to their experiences.
Okay, great. Now, that kind of leads us into the whole focus of this discussion. Have children's mental health issues really changed from, say, 20 years ago to today? And if so, why?
Well, I think there's no question that kids are coming to school. As an educator, I saw that kids were coming to school in a very different frame of mind. You know, we've always focused so much about kids who are at risk academically that we don't always spend as much time on trying to identify kids who are at risk emotionally and mentally. And the truth is, unless they're in a good place to learn, the academics aren't going to matter anyway. So we've got to figure out what is it that kids are bringing to school with in terms of their minds, their heads, and where they are and how they feel. And as I said before, there's no question that that's changed. And that's changed for a number of reasons. They're faced with a lot of different issues. Let's talk about in their home environment. In some cases, kids come from divorced families, other crises in the home. And they bring those things to school. You know, it was very interesting. I spoke at a school yesterday and read my book, and one of the teachers was telling me that she had had a second grader that morning who came to school and was so upset because his parents were divorced, and for whatever reason, his mom left, and now he's in the sole care of his father, and he was crying because he didn't know the next time he was going to see his mother. So there's so many issues like that.
Are these problems nowadays just a sign of the times that we live in, or do you see a deeper root to the cause?
I think that it is indicative of a lot of changes that are happening in society. We've become a society where, for whatever reason, conflict resolution tends to take the form of more violent behaviors than I think in the past. you know, in the past, conflict resolution was dealt with in different ways, not so violent as we see today. And that's problematic, and we've got to start dealing with why that's happening and why it's happening so frequently.
Well, what can parents and educators do to identify issues that children might have as far as their mental health is concerned?
Well, I think that's it's a very complicated issue. You know, I start with something very simple, even as a parent and a grandparent. You know, when kids come to school and you get to know them, you know that they behave in a certain way. And you know immediately when they're off, whether they're being despondent, whether they're acting out, whether they're crying, whether they're showing anger. So you can see when kids aren't behaving in the way that they normally behave. And when you start seeing that as an educator in the classroom, you've got to address that, whether it's speaking to the child privately or recommending that the counselor perhaps call that child in to see what's going on, or make a phone call home and ask the parents, you know, your child wasn't behaving in their usual self. Is something going on that I need to know about? So it's as basic as starting there to see what's happening in that child's life, so you can identify it and address it early on.
Speaking of that, how do we identify students who are at risk due to their emotional well-being?
Well, it's important, first of all, to get to know the kids and to get to know the families. That's why when you have back-to-school nights and you have programs at school, you want to get to know not only your students, but you want to get to know siblings and you want to get to know family members. And it really is more important than ever that all of us in education have to work together to be able to meet the needs of each and every child. And you need to be able to see, so become informed if the counselor has information that you need to know that a child needs certain services or has had crises in their family. It's about educating yourself to know this whole child and everything that is impacting that child.
Now, identifying a child's emotional well-being, what does that look like?
Well, it looks like, first of all, if there are any physical issues going on, if there are any psychological issues, that becomes part of a child's record that parents fill out all kinds of papers to let the school personnel know what kinds of issues we have to address. And each state has their own specific codes for what kind of accommodations you have to make. So at least knowing the physical aspect of a child and any additional emotional crises that a child is going through becomes part of something that you've got to be aware of and see what specifically you can do to address those needs on a daily basis, and also know what kind of triggers a child may respond to or react to in a negative way in a classroom to be able to avoid those, and what kinds of extra support that child needs to make sure that you're able to accommodate for that as well.
Okay, now what can parents and educators provide students so that these incidents might decrease in the future?
Well, like anything else, what do kids really want? They want to know that they're loved and cared for. They want to know that their physical and emotional needs are taken care of. They want to know that they're going to be in a safe environment. So it's working together to make sure that they are physically in a safe place, emotionally in a good place, and that they're included in a welcoming environment at school, and that they integrate into different kinds of programs and activities that they enjoy to help build their self-esteem and to help them feel that they are worthwhile and have something to contribute to the larger community.
As an educator yourself, you have, of course, witnessed situations, all kinds of situations. Have you witnessed situations where a child was actually neglected?
I have not. Personally, you know, the term neglect, there are different ways to interpret that. Have I seen kids that have needs beyond what I could give them? Yes. That doesn't mean that they were intentionally neglected. It just means that perhaps someone didn't identify what needed to be done. I can recall one student who just felt he was a twin, and his twin brother excelled in mathematics, and he was the lowest he was in the lowest math group, and I had both students in my classes at different times. And the student who was in the lowest math class, all he did was want to come to school, and all he wanted to do was get a hug from me. And unfortunately, in our environment today, you're not really allowed to hug kids. But I allowed him to hug me if he wanted to, and I kind of fist bumped him or gave him a high five and just made him feel that he was welcomed, accepted, and that we would work together to help him be the best person he could be.
Now, what can educators do to make sure that children feel safe and secure while they are sharing their feelings openly?
Well, all you can do is, first of all, be genuine with them, and you have to keep on reminding kids that you're there for one reason and one reason only, and that is to help them be the best that they can be academically, emotionally, socially, in every single way, and make your classroom and your school environment inclusive and welcoming, and just keep on reminding them, even when you're building in structure and discipline, you're always reaffirming the fact that you're there to help them and that you want them to be successful and that you care about them.
Great. Now, you are also the author of a book called Superheroes Club. Tell us a little bit about how that book relates to children's mental health.
Well, I wrote that book, as I said earlier, I always wanted something that kids could embrace in a positive way that included values that I felt were important for kids to embrace, and also create characters that were like kids in school, that they could relate to the characters, and when they read about them, they could feel what those kids were feeling. So I created Lily, who actually is one of my granddaughters. She is someone who wakes up every morning, and her mantra is, I am me, I like me, that's who I am. So in this particular case, she's that child who sees the world as a wonderful place, and she is happy to go to school. She's happy to be with other kids. And I wanted parents and educators to discuss, okay, do you feel like Lily feels, or don't you feel like Lily feels? And it opens up the discussion, and if you don't, why? And I created Alex, who has autism spectrum disorder, and his issues have to do with relating to other kids socially. And I wanted other kids to be able to see him and try to empathize with what is it like for a young person who can't really connect with other kids. And what he really wants is to belong. And I wanted educators and parents to also have that discussion about how important it is for kids to feel like they belong. And with Mia, it's all about how many times did she fall down before she was able to succeed in her gymnastics endeavors. But there also it's about encouraging kids to try to be the best that they can be. And even if they don't succeed, it doesn't make them a failure. It's just that they've tried as hard as they can. And finally, the last character is Joaquin, who is that little boy who the world is great, but he doesn't realize that there are kids around him who may not feel the way he feels. And I wanted kids to understand that it's not always about them, but that they need to think about other kids as well and see how they can contribute to including other kids in an environment that celebrates everybody's specialness and everybody's differences.
Right. Do you have an anti-bullying message in there?
Well, the message really is that we celebrate all kids because everybody has a contribution to make, and that we need to make sure that we include kids in all kinds of different ways. And one of the things I do when I read to schools, I say to kids, look at each other and just smile. And all of a sudden they smile at each other and everybody starts to giggle. And I say, didn't that feel good? So it's about you never know the little things that you can do to make someone feel better, even if it's just a hello or a smile.
And how do you hope your book will positively impact schools and our communities?
Well, I hope that it becomes a template for parents, grandparents, teachers, other educators, other people who deal with kids, that they use it as a way to approach some of these topics that we've talked about and be able to look at real situations that are happening in schools, address those issues, and try to keep the discussion going about these important topics about empathy and inclusion and about bullying and how to create environments that are happy and healthy for all kids.
Now, as we get ready to close, have you got anything you'd like to add?
Just that, just like Lily says, it's not how you look but what you do that makes you a superhero. And I think that each of us has within us the heroic potential to help make the world a better place and to help people, and kids especially.
Okay, great. And where can we get a copy of Superheroes Club?
Well, it is available at local bookstores and Barnes & Noble and definitely on Amazon.
Okay, very good. Dr. Madeline Sherrick, a longtime educator in the public schools and university system and author of the children's book Superheroes Club. Thank you for joining me today, Madeline. Really appreciate the time.
Thank you so much, and it was a pleasure talking to you, and it really does take a village to help kids grow up today.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.